Hello, this is Michael Steve from Kaplan Financial. And in this podcast, I'm going to be covering the main announcements for the March 2011 budget. The thing that struck me most about this was just how much meat and drink there is for SMEs. One or two budgets have been a bit dreary over the last 10 years with one or two belters, and this is firmly good news for us. Lots of meaty things with some quite good news, and hidden away, as you would expect, the odd bit of bad news as well. I'm going to break it into sections, and I'm going to start with personal taxes, and we'll also throw in national insurance contributions in that as well. So, what's the news? As with most of these budget provisions, some of these announcements have already been made, and some are new for today. It's part of the coalition government's outlook that they will pre-publish the provisions of a finance bill, and they have said that they're going to do that 3 months before the budget itself. And that takes away that terrible scrabble where people don't have a lot of time between the publishing of the finance bill to actually work out what it says. So some of the bits that I'm going to be talking about have already been announced, and I'll make clear which of those have been announced in December and which of those are fresh from today. Well, let's start then with income tax allowances. What we already know is that from April 2011, the personal allowance for the under 65s is rising by £1,000. So that's going from £6,475 to £7,475. That's headline news. And of course, that makes the Lib Dems very happy because it's part of their platform joining the coalition that many people will be removed from the tax net altogether. And they're aiming, and within the life of this parliament, to raise the personal allowance to £10,000. So we've had a fairly sizable increase of £1,000 in April 2011. What is new for today is that from the following year, that's 2012-13, the personal allowance for those aged under 65 will rise again to just over £8,000. It's £8,105. So that's on its way to the £10,000 that the Lib Dems so desperately want. But of course, what is less obvious is that that is clawed back at the top end because the basic rate, higher rate band, the basic rate limit, is dropping back. Now, what we already know is that from 2011, that's April 2011, the basic rate limit drops from £37,400 to £35,000. And that means that there are going to be a lot more people paying higher rate tax. Now, what has also been announced, and this is new for today, is that the basic rate limit in 2012 is dropping yet again. And that's going from £35,000 to £34,370. So that means that even more people will be dragged into higher rate tax. So it's just shifting the burden, isn't it, from people who are at the lower end of the income scale to people who are in the middle of the income scale. So it's always the people in the middle that are being squeezed, isn't it? So that's a little bit of bad news hidden away in there. And although, of course, the media is trumpeting and the government is trumpeting the raising of the personal allowance on its way to 10,000, they haven't trumpeted very loudly the fact that a lot more people will be paying higher rate tax. And the Institute of Fiscal Studies reckons that about one in five people will now be higher rate taxpayers compared to about one in 20 about 5 years ago. So that's the bad news. Incidentally, I produced a blog on this on the website for March 2011, where I've looked at the income tax changes and the next changes, at least to the extent that we knew them at that time. Recommend you have a quick look at that, folks. The blog shows that for somebody on £20,000 a year as an employed earner is going to be around about £240 a year better off, and that's in both income tax and NICS. Going a bit further up the scale, an employed earner on £45,000 is going to be worse off by about £150 per annum income tax and NICS. And somebody, an employed earner on £60,000, is going to be worse off all up by about £300. Also in that blog, I had a quick look at self-employed earners and the news there. The bad news, of course, is the rise in NICS, Class 2 and Class 4, particularly Class 4. And a quick calculation shows that somebody who's a self-employed earner with profits of £20,000 is going to be paying the fairly modest £12 a year extra in NICS, but somebody on £45,000 profits going to be paying £164 more NICS, and somebody on £60,000 is going to be paying just over £300 more per annum in NICS. So that rather suggests that the argument for incorporation is still there, and there's nothing I've seen in the budget consultations and the budget material that's been produced either in December or today which suggests that there's going to be any attack on incorporation. So it looks, at least at this stage, as though it's another good year for incorporations, and we should always bear that in mind when giving that advice to our clients. In fact, of course, the corollary of that, and I'm thinking out loud here, is that the personal allowance salary, that's assuming you're going to do personal allowance salary and dividend strip, of course, with the numbers going up, suggests that you can pay more. Remember, the trick is to get you into credit with the NICS numbers. I'll show you some examples of this on the tax upgrade series. We'll have a 5-minute look at incorporation and looking at the numbers. But certainly on the basis of the blog and on the basis of the information that I have so far, it looks as though incorporation is still a good idea, of course, for the right clients. Incidentally, the big news there is reform. And I know governments have been talking about this for years, but they're now seriously talking again about merging income tax and NICS. For those of you who have been on the tax upgrade series over the last year or two have known that we've been sort of edging towards the levels coming together. But I think this is full-scale integration, which means that you won't be paying, as it were, separate tax into a separate pot. NICS is about 100 years old, if you recall. But the idea is that it'll simply be merged, which rather suggests, of course, that you'll have people on 20% income tax will probably have a tax rate rising by around about 12%, and the same again for a 40% taxpayer. So it looks as though they're on their way to being merged, but my own instinct is that that's going to take years. Okay, a couple of thoughts on employee issues. The first is the fuel benefit charge, 2011-12. That's, remember, the number that is the multiplier. I think that's the way that it's described in ITEPA. It's the multiplier where you multiply this figure, which is currently 18,000, by the CO2 percentage for the car. And that level of 18,000 is due to be increased to 18,800 with effect from the 6th of April 2011. The obvious corollary of that, of course, is that company cars, free fuel benefit in particular, is going to be less attractive. The other issue that I think is actually very welcome news is in respect of the approved mileage allowance payments. This is, of course, the known and loved 4025 system. And I'm delighted to be able to announce that the 40p level has risen to 45p. And I think that much more accurately reflects the cost of an employee using his or her car or van in his or her employer's business. So 40p is rising to 45p. That's in April of 2011. That goes, as the old system did, up to £10,000 per annum. And then it drops, and it's dropping back to the old figure, so no change there, of 25p per mile. So I think that's very welcome news. Remind yourself, too, and there's some good scope here for getting some tax back. If you are an employee and you are not being paid at the 45p rate, same rule applies as it's done when the rate was 40p. That is, you are eligible to claim mileage allowance relief for the difference between what your employer pays you and the top rate, which is at the moment 40p, but about to rise to 45p. So that's excellent news. I'm very pleased about that one there. And I think most of us would agree that that's long overdue. Another announcement today was a review of non-domicile taxation, the famous non-doms. They've come in for a little bit of a bashing. I think the most obvious announcement today was that the £30,000 annual charge for long-term non-domiciled UK residents is being raised from £30,000 to £50,000, but it only affects people who have been UK resident for 12 or more years. So the I think that's going to have some effect probably on bankers and very, very rich people who live in the UK who have come in from abroad. ISAs have come in for a little bit too. The ISA limit is changing very slightly, going up with indexation. And also, again, this is a slightly old announcement, but the government announced back in October that it would introduce a new tax advantage account for children, which is going to be known as a junior ISA. And although that's officially going to come on stream from April, it'll be like the other ISA changes of a year or two ago. In practice, the ISA industry will not be ready before the autumn, so the levels will be the same. But as a matter of practical administration, they won't be ready to take them until October. So I think if you're a parent with a few bob to spare, then it sounds as though putting something into your children's junior ISA is not a bad thing to do. Right, let's turn now to capital gains tax. As you would expect and hope, the annual exempt amount, the annual allowance, if you like, is rising in line with inflation, and that's going to go to £10,600 with effect from the 6th of April. It will go up beyond that in April 2012 and so on and so forth, but like a lot of these allowances, they are going to be indexed, but rather cunningly, they're going to be indexed in line with the CPI, the Consumer Prices Index, as opposed to the Retail Price Index, the RPI. The difference, of course, being housing costs. The CPI does not have housing costs in, and the RPI does. So as a result of that, they won't be going up as fast as perhaps they would be. So you might, if you were cynical, take the view that that's in effect an increase in tax. So there you go. That's the first thing on CGT, the annual exempt amount. The other announcement was in respect of entrepreneurs' relief and the lifetime limit for gains qualifying for the relief is going to increase from 5 million to 10 million. And that's going to be with effect from the 6th of April. There doesn't seem to be any other major changes to entrepreneurs' relief. So there you go, a couple of useful announcements in respect of capital gains tax. There are some other bits in there as well about enterprise investment schemes and venture capital trusts, and I will mention those briefly because if you're thinking of investing in startup companies, then obviously the EIS, the Enterprise Investment System, is potentially of interest to you. And there are some changes on that, and I will briefly cover those on the tax upgrade series. Okay, let's move on now. The next obvious area that strikes me are the rules in respect of furnished holiday lets. Now, you'll be aware that furnished holiday lets have had a rather bumpy ride over the last few years. And the draft finance bill that was published back in December had some changes. And I'd like to very quickly run through those because obviously they are of interest to quite a few AAT members. So let's remind ourselves what's going on here. Furnished holiday lets has always traditionally been a very attractive relief. Remember, it's available for individuals and companies. So if you were, say, a farming company, a limited company operating your family farm, and you were letting out a few converted barns, then those would be eligible for the furnished holiday let reliefs. And they've been very good reliefs, principally, of course, for losses and sideways loss relief. But there also have been some other quite attractive CGT reliefs. There are some major changes coming up. The last Labour administration said they were going to scrap it, and then there was a last-minute change of heart. The coalition government has decided to retain it, but to make the conditions more onerous. The most obvious increase in severity of the conditions is the two numbers there, first on the availability and the second number on the days actually let. Currently, to be a furnished holiday let, you have to have your property available for 140 days. And that is going to rise. Now, this is going to be not in 2011, but from 2012, it's going to rise from 140 days to 210 days. So if you divide that by seven, well, that's 30 weeks, isn't it? It's got to be available for 30 weeks in the year. And the actually let number is going from 70 days a year to 105 days. And that's what, 15 weeks, isn't it? So it's got to be let from 2012. So there's a year's grace in here. It's got to be available for 30 weeks and actually let for 15 weeks. Now, that's obviously quite bad news, especially in a recessionary environment where, you know, people aren't going to be spending. So, you know, there's a real possibility that a lot of these furnished holiday lets will actually be lying idle. But there's going to be seemingly a rather useful election which allows a person who's genuinely tried to meet the letting condition and failed by electing to still remain as a furnished holiday let. Now, there are obviously lots of question marks as to how you satisfy HMRC that you've genuinely tried, but they're clearly making the effort there, because we all know that the problem with furnished holiday lets is that some year you qualify and some years you don't. And if you do, say, make a loss, then some years you can set it off and some years you can't. So it you know, it's that air of uncertainty that isn't really very good indeed. That's the first change, but that's mercifully not coming in till 2012. The other one, which appears to be coming in from this year, is the loss of IT sideways relief. Instead of being able to carry your losses sideways to your other income in the year, or against your general income if you're a company, that's stopping. And it appears, just from a look of this, and I'll confirm this on the tax series, that you can only set your losses from your furnished holiday let against other furnished holiday let lettings income. So that's not just ring-fencing it within your property empire, as it were, but that's quite severely restricting it. So it remains to be seen as to how useful the furnished holiday let stuff is going to be. The other bits, the capital allowances and the CGT bits, don't appear, as far as I can see in this very sort of quick review of the budget stuff today, they don't appear to have changed, but I will revisit that. And by the time we get to the tax series, I'll have that one nailed down, as obviously today we're just trying to pick up the highlights. So there you go, some quite interesting stuff on furnished holiday lets. That clearly does affect a lot of AAT members, especially those operating for owners of furnished holiday lets in rural areas, very often, as we've said, farmers. Okay, so that's enough on furnished holiday lets. Let's move on and find something else. Let's now turn to some business tax issues, and let's start with corporation tax. That's a bit of a flourish here from George today, when he announced that the main rate of corporation tax, remember that's for people with profits of 1.5 million and above, was going to be dropping by 1%, but he's at the last moment, like a conjurer producing a rabbit from the hat. Remember, chancellors love that sort of thing. He announced that it would be not just a 1% drop, but a 2% drop. So the main rate of corporation tax is now going to be 26%. For the financial year, which starts on the 1st of April, and it's going to drop to 25% from April 2012. He's not officially announced anything beyond that at the moment, but I think he's sort of heading for around about 24%. Not equivalent good news, sadly, for the small profits rate. That was announced at 20% for the finance year beginning the 1st of April 2011, and that doesn't appear to have changed. So nothing extra, no extra rabbits out of the hat for SMEs there. One thing that was pre-announced, although I can't see any obvious, references to it today. I don't think it's going to disappear. And that will be of interest to AAT members is the associated companies rules, which have been out for consultation and some draft legislation. So the assumption I'm working on is that those will be in the finance bill, which will be published within a day or two. If you remember, the associated companies rules say that where one or more companies, typically husband and wife companies, where husband has one company and madam has another company, even though they're completely and utterly independent, they may be two different towns even, so two different towns, two completely different trades, they are automatically associated. And they are associated because of the marriage. Civil partners as well, of course. But husband and wife companies have always been automatically associated through the marriage. Now, that obviously is not good news, and I'm delighted to remind you that there's been some changes, and the rules, as I understand it, are going to be that there will only be an association where you have, and I think the phrase that's being banded around is a substantial commercial interdependence, and that will pull you in. So when you've got a classic example of a husband with his garage business or a building business in one town and his wife with, say, a tax consultancy in another town, and she owns 100% of her company and he owns 100% of his company, currently associated, and there will only be a future association if there is this substantial commercial interdependence. So the times where that may occur is where you have got husband and wife businesses or civil partner businesses on the same premises. They're much more likely to remain caught by these associated company rules. Imagine, if you will, say, a tanning salon and a gym. Supposing Sir has got the gym downstairs and Madam's got the tanning salon and beauty salon upstairs. Those are much more likely to remain associated companies, even if she's got 100% of hers and he's got 100% of his. So that's clearly an area where we need to be very cautious in giving our advice. Obviously, it will depend upon the profits being generated by the businesses. If they're very low, the fact that the £300,000 might be divided by two is neither here nor there. Remind yourself, please, that the associated company rules are quite different from the rules on the AIA, and I will be making reference to the AIA in just a moment or two. So there you go, quite a bit there on corporation tax. We can move on and have a talk about VAT. VAT, I love the word they use here. They are the headline is the revalorization of registration and deregistration thresholds. I mean, why can't they simply use plain English and say that they're going up? So there it is. The VAT registration threshold is going up, and it's going from 70,000 to 73,000, which of course means that the deregistration limit, which is always 2,000 underneath that, will rise from 68,000 to 71,000. So some good news there. More small businesses will be taken out of the net, the VAT net, which means they don't have to worry about accounting. They'll have more money to play with. So some generally good news there. There are some other VAT announcements too, the sort of regular migratory birds on the mudflats here. New fuel scale charges for prescribed accounting periods beginning on or after the 1st of May. So basically the accounting periods in the early summer will be affected by the new fuel scale charges. A couple of other VAT things. Business samples. If you leave business samples with potential customers, there's always been the problem about having business assets which are no longer business assets and therefore, under the basic VAT rules, are deemed supply. Now, to date, business samples have had a sort of partial relief under the business gift rules, but very often they've fallen outside of that because business samples can easily breach the gift rule limits. And therefore, they seem to be taking it outside the scope of VAT altogether. So there's going to be some new legislation on that in the finance bill. The other bit too, anti-planning here, there appears to be some new legislation on supply splitting. So if you make a sort of a bundle of supplies, one of which would be, say, standard rated, and one of which would be zero rated, there's some rules to stop you from splitting those out such that a third party provides one and you provide the other. And it remains to be seen what that looks like. I haven't seen the detail of that yet. So we'll probably cover that one briefly in the tax update series. Right, well, there you go. There's a few things on VAT. Now let's move on, because I want to talk about capital allowances. Some of the capital allowance announcements have already been made. We know, for example, that the writing down allowances are due to drop in April 2012. The main rate pool is going to drop from 20% writing down allowance to 18%, still, of course, on a reducing balance basis. And the special allowance pool, the special rate pool, is going to be dropping from 10% to 8%. So across the two pools, there are a drop-off of 2 percentage points, but as I said, from April 2012. The other bit of bad news, although a lot of our AAT clients won't be dramatically affected by this, obviously the ones at the top end will, and that's in respect to the annual investment allowance, the AIA, that falls in April 2012. Remember, at the start of 2010, it stood at 50,000, then Alistair Darling in his last budget raised it to 100, and then in the emergency budget, George said that he was going to reduce that from 100,000 to 25,000, but not until April 2012. Now, what's the effect of that? Well, I think a lot of the smallest businesses that we act for, £25,000 will easily cover their plant and machinery. Incidentally, there's nothing to stop you from having, as far as I can see at least, from having a company and a partnership, say, or a company and a sole tradership, and both of those will be eligible to have a separate AIA. And that's on the basis that they're dealt with in separate parts of the Capital Allowances Act. So that rather suggests that's correct. There's a very interesting bit on short life assets. Now, what are these? I mean, traditionally, computers. And it's all about de-pooling, isn't it, to give you a tax and a cash advantage. And, well, let's just remind ourselves of what this short life asset claims, what they are and what they do. If a business elects for plant and machinery, classically think a computer to be a short life asset, then capital allowances are calculated individually on these assets rather than getting lost in the main pool. And they are calculated individually until a cutoff point, and that's currently 4 years. So if the asset is sold or scrapped before the cutoff point, then the total allowances given over the period of ownership equal the actual net cost of the asset to the business through, of course, the balancing allowance. So by separately itemizing them in your Excel spreadsheet, just moving them to a column of their own, it enables you to, as it were, accelerate the allowances. They don't get lost on disposal or scrapping in the main pool. So that's pretty good news. But the four-year cutoff period rather suggests that it's only been computers that have taken advantage of this. And what the government has done and announced today, as far as I can see, I haven't seen this one before, is that they're extending the period of the short life asset. The cutoff period, if you like, is being extended from 4 years to 8 years. And that's 8 years after the end of the accounting period, of course, in which the asset was acquired. Now, why have they done that? Well, of course, that won't affect computers, but I think the effect of that is going to be that SMEs that actually do some greater capital expenditure and are actually tending to get rid of these assets within a sort of 4 to 8 year period will be eligible to get this more beneficial tax stroke cash treatment rather than the whole thing getting lost in the main pool. That obviously is going to affect the bigger spenders, because the smaller spenders on CapEx, if it's plant and machinery, are clearly going to be within the scope of the AIA, so it's not going to be an issue for them. It's only going to be an issue for the bigger spenders. And just to make this clear, this rule is for all new expenditure on or after April 2011. So that actually sounds quite good news. That's one of my favourite bits next to the 40 rising to 45p on the mileage rates. That's one of my favourite bits of this budget. I think a lot of people will be able to take advantage of that. And of course, they'll need to, won't they? Because we've got drops in writing down allowances and so on and so forth, drops in the AIA. So good news there for the appropriate SMEs. Okay, a few last miscellaneous points. The Chancellor made some announcements in respect of gift aid. One of the big problems with gift aid, well, two main problems with gift aid. The first and important one to a lot of the charities is that where they do bucket collections in the streets, unless someone is kind enough to do a gift aid form, which is a bit naughty for the whole amount, you're not going to be able to take advantage of the gift aid on that. And what seems to be happening is that there's an announcement to say that bucket collections up to £5,000 per annum will be eligible for gift aid. So that's very good news. I think it is estimated, and I'm just having a quick flip through the paper here, that up to 100,000 charities will be able to benefit from that. So that's good news. There's also going to be a facility to actually do your gift aid claims online rather than actually do them on paper. So there's a further sort of foray into the world of electronics. Okay, so that's gift aid. The Chancellor also made some announcements in respect of pensions. Now, there are some big changes coming up in pensions, certainly from 2012, and I do intend on the tax update series and more, and some more blogs this year, to actually spend a little bit of time on pensions, because I think that's something that we need to be able to advise on. There's been quite a lot of consultation on pensions, especially movement to a flat rate pension of £140 a year, which is just a simple way of calculating it. You know what you're going to get right up front, and all the stuff about S2Ps is just going to disappear. But that's going to take a long time to implement, as far as I can see, and it's aspirational rather than sort of being just over the horizon. But I think that's where we're moving to. And of course, as longevity increases, then people are going to have to wait longer before they actually take their money. As far as the lifetime allowance is concerned for people making contributions into pension funds, that's dropping to £50,000 from £255,000 from April of this year. So some bad news there. But we always knew that there was going to be bad news on pension tax relief from April 2011. And that's why there's been this major anti-forestalling legislation in place for the last two tax years. Okay, one last point, and then I think we're there. IHT. Now, we already know that the nil rate band is going to be frozen until April 2015. But there's a proposal in this budget announced by George Osborne today that from April 2012, those who are thinking about leaving at least 10% of their estate to charity will benefit from a 10% drop in the IHT rate on their estates. Right, well, there you go, folks. I think that completes my sort of quick announcements on the budget. I very much look forward to seeing you on the tax series, where we'll have a good opportunity to kick these things around a bit more and look at some tax planning for our clients. See you then. Cheerio.